Heidelberger Frühling Podcast. Heute mit
Pekka Kuusisto.
Er ist Geiger, kommt aus Finnland. Er wird beim Heidelberger Frühling 2020 spielen. Und er hat eine ganz besondere Mission gehabt. Er war nämlich schon einige Monate vor dem Frühling in Heidelberg und hat sich umgeschaut, wo überall Musik gemacht werden kann. Welche Eindrücke haben Sie da bekommen?
The original idea came from the fact that the concert hall, I believe, is under renovation. So we had a wonderful day with some friends from the festival and some friends from Mahler Chamber Orchestra, looking at churches, dance studios, university lecture halls, even bars and restaurants. It gave me a good feeling. I started thinking that maybe in a perfect world I would always do this before going to a new city to go and be on the highest peak of the church tower, look over the city and see if I can understand how it works. It's a beautiful town.
Sie waren dann mit der Geige auch unterwegs und haben da und dort mal probiert, wie die Akustik ist.
Yeah, that was actually a very important part of this exercise. For me to play a little bit and for my colleagues from the orchestra to listen and see what kind of music would work. Of course, some places are quite obvious. When you are in a big church, you will know how it's going to be. But some of the smaller spaces, and especially some of the, you know, the spaces in the university or some of the pubs, it was nice to take the violin out and just make some music to see what it feels like.
Sie treten zusammen auf mit dem Mahler Chamber Orchestra. Mahler Chamber Orchestra hat eine Residenz beim Frühling, also ist eine ganze Woche dann auch da zusammen mit Ihnen. Aber natürlich können Sie nicht mit dem ganzen Orchester beispielsweise in einen Pub gehen. Das löst sich dann irgendwie auf. Wie ist das geplant?
You know, the Mahler Chamber Orchestra is a wonderfully flexible animal in the way that it can become any sort of an ensemble depending on either where you are playing or what kind of repertoire we are playing. So, for example, in the pub crawl, when we go from bar to bar and play some music, this will be probably very small ensembles, violin duos playing Bartok, some groups playing some folk music. The pub crawl program is not entirely set in stone yet, but this will be quite lightweight, so we can move quickly in case the people don't like our music.
Und Sie sind immer dabei, also Sie kann man überall dann sehen und erleben, oder sind die Musiker vom Orchester auch allein unterwegs?
The current plan is for there to be one group, including myself. I'm a part of it, and then we just go from one pub to the next.
Das ist der erste Programmpunkt in dieser Woche. Am ersten Tag sind die Bars dran, die Cafés dran, die Kirchen dran, die Universität dran. Also man wird ganz Heidelberg, die ganze City, Altstadt, wird voller Musik eigentlich sein. Ist das auch ein bisschen mit die Idee?
Yeah, of course. It's like a voluntary exile that the festival is doing, from pilgrimage or whatever you want to call it. We are living in a time when a lot of interesting orchestras and ensembles are coming up with ideas how to take the music to their audience in a slightly new way, but also for the orchestras to see what it will feel like to play together in circumstances that are a little bit out of the ordinary. And of course, playing music in a bar is not a new invention. This is quite normal in the world. But for an orchestra like Mahler Chamber to do it, it's a little bit extraordinary. I hope it will also be an interesting tool for the festival to see how this kind of a thing works. Maybe if it becomes a really wonderful thing, then maybe the festival can keep an element of our residency in their planning, even when the concert hall is back in use.
Und es passt zum Motto des Festivals, unterwegs, being on the way, passt das natürlich auch sehr gut, dieses Gehen von Bar zu Bar, von Pub zu Pub.
Yeah, and of course it's a wonderful miniature of the life of the Mahler Chamber Orchestra and also of my life. We are basically every week in a different city. I have an artistic partnership with Mahler Chamber Orchestra, which means that every now and then I will be in the same city with them. And then we go maybe for 1 year, we go in different directions. Sometimes we might meet accidentally. And then one lucky week, we happen to be working together again. So it is, the Heidelberg project is like a miniature of what we do.
Ein anderes Konzert oder eine andere Konzertform hat den Namen A Passage in Time. Das findet in einer Kirche statt, wo dann sehr alte Musik gesungen, gespielt wird. Es ist auch ein Chor dabei, ein Vokalensemble. Das geht von, ich glaube, von Monteverdi bis ganz zeitgenössischen Sachen.
Well, we are going to try to use the space of the church so that different ensembles are performing in different parts of the building. So some pieces will be performed from front and center, some pieces will be performed from upstairs or behind the audience. When we were there, I got the feeling of the acoustic that it might be one of these places where it's possible to put together a program where most of the information is created within the minds of the listeners. So it's not like a traditional performance in the sense where all the necessary information is handed to you from the stage. But some of the music will hopefully put you in kind of in a spiritual position where your imagination takes over. And for that to happen, it's somehow sometimes useful to not have the performers right in front of you. There's some Johann Sebastian Bach, there's going to be some Gubaj Dulina, some Mendelssohn, some Bryce Dessner, things like this. It's actually almost like a violently varied repertoire. But I think the selection of the pieces, and in this case, the venue, will put such a strong stamp on it that it will hopefully become something larger than the sum of its parts.
Die Kirche als magischer Ort, the church as a magic place.
Yeah, the geometry of the building, and it's traditionally used to search for something within yourself, without this being a particularly religious concert, by any means. This is the effect that I believe we are hoping for. When something gets offered to you that will give you the opportunity to reflect your own experience against it, or reflect your own life, or whatever it is that you're handling in your life at the moment. We'll see how it works.
Das letzte der Konzerte, wir haben jetzt nicht alle genannt, das letzte ist eigentlich ein klassisches Konzert mit dem ganzen Orchester. Da spielen sie ein Bach-Violinkonzert, das E-Dur-Konzert, und sie spielen ein Violinkonzert von Niko Muhly.
Ja.
Können Sie etwas über diesen Komponisten sagen?
Ja, I think Niko is not very much performed in Germany yet. It shows wonderfully clearly the divide between the musical lives in countries as near to each other as the United Kingdom and Germany. Niko has been an extremely well-known and very much played composer in the UK for more than a decade already, I would say. In the American, North American musical life, he has a very strong position. He has, within the last, I don't know, 5-6 years, he has already had 2 operas at the Metropolitan and 2 operas at the English National Opera in London. He's a friend of mine. If I would have to pick a person from the contemporary composers that I know very well, or the musicians that I know very well, a person who has the same kind of spark as I imagine a Mozart or a Mendelssohn would have had. Maybe more Mozart, because Niko is very mischievous. He has some rather unique abilities about music. He's an extremely colorful composer. Of course, he grew up in North America and very much in New York. He started working as an assistant for Philip Glass when he was, I think, 16 years old. But Niko is by no means a minimalist composer. He is surprisingly aware of any kind of music that is going on the planet. He's very much a internet native. So he's using the hecticness of information in our time as his advantage to the music that he creates. I have been working with him for more than 10 years already, quite frequently. And the concerto that we are playing in Heidelberg, called Shrink, which is a reference to the harmonic, kind of the principal harmonic structure of the piece. The concerto was premiered in Australia in December of 2019, so it's still very new. It's a fantastically athletic piece with some incredibly beautiful and almost painful music. I'm quite certain that Niko's concerto will become one of the pieces that sort of define my violinistic career for the next 10 years or so.
Did he dedicate it to you?
Yeah, it is written for me, and a little bit also in collaboration with me, in the sense that he would write me some messages and ask,
how is this? Is it doable? And then he would write it. I'm extremely, extremely happy about the piece.
Was Sie bis jetzt erzählt haben, zeigt, dass eines Ihrer Anliegen ist, Grenzen zu überschreiten. Grenzen, die bisher galten vielleicht in der klassischen Musik, also was die Aufführungsorte, die Venues betrifft, was die Zusammenarbeit von Orchestern und Solisten betrifft. Und dass man, wenn man diese Grenzen überschreitet, vielleicht etwas ganz Neues herauskommt.
Hopefully. I do think that in general our profession should be used a little bit more as a laboratory. Of course, in times where, you know, sometimes the economic situations of orchestras or festivals are not so secure, it is difficult to trust experiment as much as I think one should. So it's a fantastic challenge of both educating your audience in a very long-term way, across years, across decades, you educate your audience to trust you. And then at the same time, you have to be very much aware on a day-to-day basis on what is going on in music, to really keep pushing, to keep renewing the art form. I think something very interesting happened to music when recordings became normal 100 years ago or so. We started having standardized interpretations of music, interpretations that could be distributed all over the whole world. So in Japan, somebody would know how David Oistrakh plays violin. And this is, if you think about it, it's such a radical change to how music gets handled, or it would get handled before then. In Leipzig, you would not know how somebody in Helsinki, Finland, plays. Now we are all connected.
Ist das so gut? Es entsteht ein Standard, ein Anspruch der Hörer. Sie möchten es so hören, wie es auf der Platte ist, immer und überall. Und wenn ein Künstler dann es anders macht oder vielleicht auch mal einen Fehler macht, ist er gleich durchgefallen?
It's very much a sword with two sharp edges. I think the fact that even in a small place like Finland, you could hear from recordings how the great stars of the world make music, it raises the standard of music making everywhere. You know what the profession needs much quicker. But on the other hand, the idea of the interpretations becoming more standardized is terrifying to me. I've spoken about this a little bit with Patricia Kopaczynskaya. Sometimes I feel like in the world of music making, in the world of violin playing, Patricia is a little bit like the forest fire that wipes out the old things, and then the rest of us can go walk behind her and plant the new seeds. And I try to put myself sometimes a little bit in that profession, to deliberately not be a prisoner of various traditions. I pick the ones I respect, but in the way you grow up as a musician these days, and the way you are constantly made aware of how other people do it or how it's been done before, it's very interesting and very difficult to find the way to approach, for example, playing a concerto with an orchestra that has a very long tradition with that composer. Of course, I don't want to disrespect their tradition, but I know that it doesn't make sense for us to make a concert that is like a recording. The concert still has to be unique.
Living.
Exactly. It's not a museum art form in that sense. Coming from a country like Finland has its advantages, because I think when Beethoven was around, we were really not aware of him in a general sense. The birth of classical music in Europe, if you look at Finland at the time, we were not really a part of this.
I think you were Russian.
We were probably even Swedish.
Swedish, yes, that's right.
So while I desperately want to be aware of how Beethoven lived and how Mozart lived and how Brahms lived, I don't have the baggage, the pressure of coming from the same place, if you know what I mean. But while saying that, I also remember when I was a teenager and I thought I knew everything, I would frequently go to concerts in Helsinki and listen to non-Finnish violinists play Sibelius Violin Concerto. And I thought, they just can't understand it because they are from Finland. And then one of these years, later years, I thought, I was in Austria and I was playing something by Mozart. I thought, they must feel exactly the same way. But the standardization has not gone that far. Has not gone that far yet. But it's a fantastically interesting time to be a musician. There's so much more in music that you can be aware of these days, thanks to information technology. It's not only a possibility, but more like a responsibility to be aware of what is going on and make sure that the spread of information doesn't make you standardized,
but that it actually makes you more radical.
Sie sind auch eine Generation, wo das schon ganz normal ist mit Internet. Das ist für eine ältere Generation erst noch mal schwerer zu verstehen oder auch zu verfolgen. Aber sie machen es so, dass alle mitkommen können. Sie lassen niemanden zurück. Die Programme, die sie machen, sind nicht so, dass nur ein kleiner Kreis sie verstehen kann.
There's different situations for different things. I do love playing the kind of music that approximately two people will understand what's going on. But a festival like Heidelberger Frühling is not, I don't think this is the place. We want to find the exact right balance between playing a Mendelssohn symphony and playing something that nobody has ever heard before. I think generally, while orchestras and festivals all over the world are looking for an audience from a new generation, the biggest mistake we could make is to make the previous generation feel like we don't appreciate them anymore. Maybe when you're 22, you don't want to listen to all the Bruckner symphonies every year. It comes later. Mm-hmm. And this is exactly the way it should be. This is how humans work. Maybe we can stretch it a little bit, but to make our traditional audience feel like they are not welcome anymore, that would be a horrible, horrible mistake.
Ich weiß, Sie nehmen auch die Verantwortung ernst, die ein Künstler heute hat, zumal wenn er einen großen Namen hat, ein bekannter Künstler ist, was um uns herum geschieht. Und ich habe vor kurzem ein Video gesehen, da sitzen sie mit ihrer Geige, ich vermute in einem karelischen, völlig kaputten Wald. Sie spielen dort Geige. Und sie sind engagiert an einer Bewegung, die ich nicht kannte, dass die Forests, die Wälder der nördlichen Hemisphäre gefährdet sind und dass man da was tun muss. Wie ist das Engagement des Künstlers heute? Muss er sich engagieren? Es gibt viele, die sich nicht engagieren.
I don't think there's a rule to it. There might be one day when nobody can be quiet anymore. But I don't think general engagement is in the nature of people. I was on social media the other day asking my friends if there are places where they refuse to work because of, for example, the way the local government is operating. And I had a lot of fascinating and intelligent answers from a lot of friends of mine. But the basic line was between not performing in certain countries out of protest and then another group of people thinking that you should definitely especially play in those countries to remind the people there how it could be. If we want to think of music as something that gives you the possibility of thinking differently, then you really have to go to the places where you think it is the most difficult. When you do something, for example, like the video you mentioned in the forest, it was not in Karelia actually, it was rather in the middle of Finland. You of course expose yourself to the kind of criticism that even somebody like Greta Thunberg receives, even though she really knows what she's talking about. When you play violin, unfortunately most of your time goes to playing violin. The preparation for concerts, the upkeeping of your general ability to play the violin takes so much time that you will not have time to educate yourself to be a complete scientist in these kind of fields. And of course, because of the way information works in the world these days, once a day I come across something that I would really want to comment on. Every day is a new thing. Of course, the nature, the environment, and the Nordic forests are something that is constantly on our minds. But there is simply not enough time for all of us to comment on everything all of the time. I wouldn't put any shame on those colleagues of mine who choose to focus on making music and believing that through making music, they will be opening up some new thoughts for the people they want to communicate with. This is also a very good possibility. But for those of us who do want to comment on issues in society a bit more openly, I salute all of my colleagues who do so, and I do hope there will be more of us. I will be there.
Vielen Dank.
Vielen Dank.